to live righteously. It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. It's episode number 208, wherein I sit down with Nate Bagley. And I got to tell you this. I just went back through the emails. Kristen, who is one of the Mormon sex girls and a mutual friend of ours, she said, hey, you know what? This would be a great guest for The Cultural Hall. And she said that in an email. Do you know when? Do you know how long ago it was? You know, it's a while ago.
It's been a minute.
Monday, September 29th. Of 2014.
That's not too bad.
And so I've kept the email. I keep all emails. So people can email me, contact@theculturalhall.com. And I keep all emails, and I feel bad because I feel like a lot of people are like, oh, he didn't like my idea, or, you know, that didn't work, you know, whatever the thing was. And truth be told, there have only been maybe one or two guest ideas or, like, show ideas that I've been like, nah, I'm not going to do that. The rest just kind of sit there, and I go, yeah, it's not the right time yet.
For what it's worth, it only took me about 6 months to get over, and I cried myself to sleep every single night. So
it's like we were introduced virtually,
no big deal.
And then he
and
never called
up.
Me back.
What did I do wrong?
Nate, you are in the second and third block. We'll talk all about this Love You Mentory.
Cool.
That you do and have created, and what it is exactly, and everything like that. And I'm fascinated to get to know about that. But I want to get to know you first. So give me an idea. Are you a Utah native?
I'm a Utah native. I was born in Logan, Utah.
Okay.
Grew up as a kid in Murray, and then high school in South Jordan. And
okay.
That's kind of where I've been ever
so
since.
So really, really Utah.
I'm about as Utah Mormon as they come.
Yeah.
I did live in Orlando for 1 year, but that didn't last
Disney
too long.
Internship?
No.
Because that's even more Mormon.
Yeah, no. There's no Disney.
What were you doing in Orlando?
I was working at Tony Roma's.
Okay.
Their corporate office.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it was like, they have this really great restaurant.
Yeah, I was a server. I got recruited to be a server.
Yeah, it's a great place for ribs.
So. Delicious ribs.
That's sort of weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a little weird, but I was,
give me time frame on that.
I had just graduated from college, so
okay.
About four,
so this was like
five,
this is my opportunity.
Ago.
I'm off to the
yeah,
corporate office.
It was like, oh, I'm going to go spread my wings and fly and be an independent human being and experience the world outside of Utah. And it was great, and it was a great experience. I spent a little while on my way home. I lived in Austin for a summer and did
oh, really?
A couple other things.
Like you got tired driving home from
yeah.
Florida. You're like, wait,
and then
hey, you know what? This actually won't be too bad. Let's stay here.
Yep. So, and I was kind of a nomad for quite a while. And then have just kind of planted roots in Utah for a bit.
Did you serve a mission?
Did.
Where'd you go?
Santiago, Chile.
Okay.
Yep.
How's that? Temple there now, right?
There is a temple there. Yep.
Wasn't there when you were there?
It was there.
Okay.
Yeah. It's been around for a while. It was good. I wouldn't do it again.
You wouldn't do a mission again?
No. I mean, no, probably
Talk
not.
To me about it. Why not? Most people are like, yeah, you bet. Or,
yeah,
man,
you know,
really
a lot
fulfilling.
Of people say best 2 years. I tend to think that a lot of those people say that because it's just what people say.
Yeah.
It was a rough 2 years for me.
Third world stuff or what?
Santiago is one of the most Americanized cities in South America. It's pretty first world for the most part. And for me, it was just really stressful, emotional. I had really high expectations. I kind of grew up as a golden boy in the church.
What do you mean?
I was that kid who was always the deacon's quorum president, the teacher's quorum president,
friends
with the seminary council
yeah.
kids, always behaved myself,
yeah.
did everything that everybody said I should do. And
so you totally rebelled. We'll get to that. But
but I had this thought in my head before I left on my mission that I was going to be this ridiculously amazing missionary. I was going to go out and people were going to be like lining up to get baptized by Elder Bagley.
We heard about you.
Yeah. Oh, he's coming. Oh, yeah, my gosh, yeah. everybody.
We dreamt a dream and yeah. now he's here.
Get your whites on.
Yeah, exactly.
So I showed up. And compound that, I got called to Santiago, which was one of the highest baptizing missions in the world, was what I was told.
Right, so it sort of fulfills
so,
this prophecy
yeah,
in
I'm
your
like,
mind
oh,
where you're
man,
like, okay.
I'm just going to be like, dunking people, you know, converting people. Like, the Spirit is going to be my companion. It's
right.
going to be amazing.
I won't actually have another companion. It
yeah.
will just be the Spirit.
It'll
be experimental that they'll do with
together.
Me.
This is Elder Ghost.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. That's probably sacrilegious.
But no, that's fine.
For that first year, I didn't have one baptism. I really struggled to get along with a handful of my companions, probably in part because I was so uptight.
Mm.
And
one of the ones that's like, the rules!
Yeah, I was like really, yeah. really, like almost overly obedient. And
right.
I had to really learn to like relax and kind of let go of these expectations that I had for myself and that I thought everybody else had for me.
Right.
So at about my year mark, I had kind of a... a literal come to Jesus meeting with myself where I was just like, I don't know if I want to be here. I don't know if I can keep doing this. And had to kind of like, I changed a lot as a person, but it was just a very, it was very, I'm glad I went. Like, I'm really glad I went. I learned a lot about myself and changed a lot, but I don't know if I would want to go through it again.
Yeah. So. Because, you know, it's an interesting thing when you talk about, you know, conversions on your mission and stuff like that. And more I think about it, and with the younger the age and things like that, I can't help but think that a lot of what the church is doing is just like, hey, individuals in the church become converted.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll pick up some people along the way, and maybe 20% of those people will stick around.
Yep.
But really, so much more about yourself.
Yeah. And I don't think I realized that until much later.
Yeah. And you don't think you want to do that again? You don't want to have that sweet personal refiner's fire again?
Where I would go do it again with when I was married with my wife. But if they called me right now and they're like, hey, Elder Bagley, we want you to go out and serve a mission again, I'd be like, probably not.
See, the thing is, I think I would do it again. I don't know that I'd go 2 years. Mm-hmm. But if they were like, hey, 6 months, we need you to go do this again, I think I'd do six months.
Yeah, maybe I'd do 6 months.
But I don't know that I'd go a year. I remember
being at my six-month mark and going, I have 18 more months. Are you freaking kidding me? I'm never going home.
Mainly stateside companions or mainly?
I had a mix.
Mix?
A lot of guys from Chile, some from Argentina, a couple from Peru, and a handful from the States.
That's the thing that I feel like I missed out on, too. All mine were like, I went to Cleveland, Ohio.
Cleveland.
And so, you know, like the most exotic we had was someone who was actually from the Ohio mission who had served somewhere else and had to serve stateside because he'd gotten hurt but still wanted to finish the ring. Like, that was exotic. Otherwise, it was like Kansas. And
did that guy like show up with a fake accent?
Yeah.
He's like, I was serving in France.
Hey, bonjour, everybody. It's like, you're from Philadelphia. No. Yeah, but I mean, you have those.
Do you ever notice how return missionaries, like when they go, I don't know, eat somewhere where the quiz from their home country, they have to pronounce everything in the language.
Oh, of course. Like, of course.
It's not burrito, it's burrito.
Yeah.
Yeah. Croissant is croissant.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that super smug thing that most people can't stand. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Santiago temple there. Were you able to go? Can you go to the temple on your mission?
I went several times. Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
It was really cool. Santiago is actually a lot like Salt Lake.
Okay. Like the layout, or what do you mean?
The layout, everything. So the mission I served in the East Mission, and it would have been, the geographic area is similar to serving like from Temple Square and like from the Avenues area down to like Point of the Mountain, everything east of I-15.
Oh.
So the Andes Mountains is right there, just like the Rocky Mountains are here, and you've got like a big freeway that cuts the city in half, and then downtown, you have the temple, Chile's Temple Square, and they have like the church office building there for the area office.
Hmm.
And the temple is on the same property, and they have like an MTC on that property as well.
Oh my gosh.
So it's like really, it feels a lot like home. So I was really lucky to go to the temple a couple of times. I worked in the office for a couple months and got to experience kind of the downtown area. And
so how was it for you having these unrealistic expectations and coming home? Because everything about coming home has expectations as well, where you're like, and my wife will be at the airport for me, you know?
Yeah, yeah. They actually took bets on when I would be married.
Yeah?
Yeah, the guy I came home with.
That seems like everyone does it.
You're going to be the first one to get married. It'll take about 6 months, and it's been over a decade.
Yeah. And not married?
Still not married, but dating.
Yeah?
So, yeah.
Want to be married?
Yeah, I would love to be married. I was engaged last year, and that didn't work out.
No?
No. So.
You okay?
I'm okay.
That seems like that would be a harsh thing.
You know, it's hard, especially given my my hobbies and my career. It's very love-centered and relationship-centered.
Right.
So I felt like the added professional failure on top of the personal and spiritual failure.
Like, trust me about love. I've got all sorts of
I got it covered. I got it covered. I just can't make it work for myself. So
yeah.
It was pretty humiliating and really difficult. But you get over it, man. You move on and you heal with time. And like, yeah, I just had to really commit to processing the emotions and getting past it. And now I'm in a really awesome relationship with a girlfriend I love a lot, and I'm really hopeful for the future.
Cool.
Yeah.
We'll get to that, like I say, in the second and third block. I want to get a little more about you. Let's ask family. Big family? Small family?
There's four kids in my family. I'm the oldest.
Okay.
Yep. I got two younger brothers and a younger sister.
All married, right?
My sister just got home from a mission. She's not married, but the other two are, my brothers are both married.
Yeah, what's the deal,
kids,
huh?
So, yeah. Yeah, right?
Time's a ticking. Come on, older brother. What's the deal?
Well, everybody stopped harassing me at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. Now it's sensitive. Now it's like, well, yeah, we don't know if it's ever going to work out for him. Yeah. that you go through that phase where everyone's introducing you to someone, and then it's just like, well, maybe he, you know, then there's that questioning phase, and it's like,
you're next, right? Well, yes, unless somebody else gets a divorce and remarried. Yeah. Yes, I am next.
Yeah, I would be the next
point.
Where'd you go to college?
UVU.
Okay.
Yep.
And studied?
Communications.
Okay. So, served a mission, normal time, come home. And you did have that experience where you're like, okay, marriage is the next thing, obviously.
Yeah, I thought it would be, and dated a lot. I've never not dated a lot.
Right.
And I was really good at the first several dates, and even getting a girlfriend. I had quite a few girlfriends, and once I hit about the 6-month mark, I would panic. And
panic like you didn't know what to do with,
like,
it, or panic
commitment.
I
don't know what I'm doing. Is this right? I don't know if this is right.
And how do I know if this is right? Yeah. Is this the right thing? What about right?
Am I ready? What's readiness? How do I know this is going to be? Yeah. So those didn't work out so well.
Yeah. And then graduated, and then, like you said, went to Florida. What'd you do in Austin for a summer?
I lived with my buddy and his wife for a couple of months and was trying to figure out if I wanted to stay there. We talked about starting a business together, and that didn't work out. And then that's kind of when I started doing the Loveumentary stuff that we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
And got a job there. And then right when I had started that job, I had a great friend call me up and ask me if I wanted to start to help her with a project she was on. So I ended up quitting the job and going to San Francisco for a month or two. And then ended up back in Utah. So
it's interesting where it seems like in your youth you were so like Utah, boom,
yeah,
bound, and then coming home from a mission, it's like, whatever, we'll go here, wherever, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I don't have like the reason I think I have a strong tie to Utah is just because so much of my family's here.
Yeah.
So
it keeps coming back here, but a lot of people don't ever leave. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people would never do the year at the Tony Roma's in Orlando and the summer in Austin.
Yeah, it was important for me to experience life outside Utah. I know from a lot of companions that I had that were from outside of Utah, I just know that the church culture is really different, and I wanted to experience that. I wanted to see what it was like to have the opportunity to be a leader outside of the church.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, just experience having friends that weren't members was a thing that I didn't really.
Wait a minute. I'm not going to see you at church on Sunday. Hang on.
Yeah.
How about if I do see a church on Sunday?
Yeah, but some of my best friends out there still to this day are not members of the church. Mm-hmm. You know, they invited me over for Easter dinner or for Christmas and just made sure I was taken care of. And it was really cool to get that experience.
Yeah. I've long time said that everyone should experience the church outside of Utah.
Yeah, it's much different animal.
Yeah. Hands down, a completely different experience.
Here we are back in Utah.
Yep, both of us. Let's take a break a second. We'll come back and we'll talk all about the Loveumentary. It's a second block of the Cultural Hall.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Time for the second block of the Cultural Hall, and I feel like if I was any sort of producer of this show, I would do something like, love, exciting, and new, and then, you know, fade it out and we talk about the Loveumentary. But I also find that to be really, really obnoxious, so I'm really just going to reference it, sing it, so it's like I did it.
It's beautiful.
And then we'll talk about
it. Better than the original.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
Let me know if it doesn't work out with you and your girlfriend, maybe. No. Loveumentary is a cool blending of words. That's the thing I appreciate about it.
Thank you.
Like, it seems like, I'm pretty sure you came up with it, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it seems like it's bigger than that you just sort of came up with it. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, thank you.
And such a cool idea. So tell everyone who has no idea what I'm talking about what it is.
All right. So judging by what I've said in the first block, pretty obvious that I was not great at relationships and dating. And after about a decade of trying to make that work in my life, I realized that there were two things in common that all my relationships had. And it was the fact that they all ended with a breakup and me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, all right, I really, really want to get married one day and be an awesome husband and be a great dad. So what is it that I need? Like, what is it that I'm missing out on? What are these amazing couples that are doing it well? What are they doing differently than everybody else?
Stop real quick because I have a question. Did you feel like it was your fault? Like, here it is, another relationship that for some reason I'm going to ruin, or it's going to end again because I'm a part of it.
It kind of got to that point where I was like, I am the problem here. Like, I'm doing something wrong because I turned into a good luck Chuck pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'd date a girl, it wouldn't work out, and then 3 months later she's engaged to another guy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, so it wasn't her. Like, obviously she's capable of love and commitment. Yeah. So
what's my idea?
Yeah, what's going on with me? So I just figured, you know, 50% of marriages end in divorce, and then that doesn't account for the other, like, who knows, mystery number of percentage of people who are not happy when they're married.
Sure.
So I'm like, okay, what is the small fraction of people who are happily married and doing it right, doing differently than everybody else? So I figured I'd go out and start interviewing them and capture their stories and get a glimpse into their life and their struggles and their successes and see if I could figure out what they're doing that I'm missing out on.
So how does that work?
It's all audio.
All audio.
Just like the two of us right here.
And was it something that you'd done before where you're like, no, I guess I'm going to figure out how to edit audio? And
it was just a figure it out as you go situation. I wanted to do video, and I realized really quickly that people get really weird in front of a video camera.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted people to be authentic. And people forget about a microphone 5 minutes after you start into a decent conversation.
Right.
So I noticed really quickly that that was probably the best way to get the most authentic material. And a lot of my podcasts are just not really edited that much. I just have an intro and an outro, and then that you get the raw conversation, exactly what happened. So it's like you're a fly on the wall during the chat.
So it would seem to me, though, to be an interesting thing, because I would want to get all types of relationships that I felt like were working, but I wouldn't know where, you know, that's not something, or maybe it is, that I could be like, hey, that person down on the street right there, come here.
I've done that before. I went to the 24th of July parade here and walked up to random couples and asked them if they thought they had a great relationship, and if they said yes, we'd talk. But most of the time I worked on referrals. And I figure everybody
member
has,
referrals.
Yeah, member referrals.
Is there anyone in your life that you feel like has a good relationship that we might be able to sit down and talk to?
I try and steer away from LDS couples now, though, just because there's such a high concentration of them in my network. So I've interviewed gay couples, straight couples, rich, poor, people in that live in downtown metropolis, and people who live in the butt crack of nowhere. I've interviewed a polygamous family.
I was just going to ask you.
A family who had a couple who had an arranged marriage. So I tried to get a really wide swath of variety.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, the stuff that came out of those conversations tended to trend similarly.
I bet I can guess a few of them, right?
Everybody says communication.
Communication.
Yeah. That's a pretty standard answer, and I think to get more specific, the research and also the stories that I captured showed that the most successful couples tended to be able to have a really great ability to deal with conflict.
Mm-hmm.
So communication is one thing. Like, everybody knows how to communicate, but communicating during times of distress and times of conflict is really, really important for a healthy, long-lasting relationship. Another one is just kindness. That's come up a lot lately in more recent interviews. Is I've just noticed that couples who tend to have really great relationships that I admire are just so kind with each other. And so that was a trend.
He's great, or kind like do like actions of kindness, or what do you mean?
All of the above, like kind like polite towards each other, kind like does nice things for each other, doesn't talk behind each other's back, very complimentary of each other. A lot of people say you have to put the other person first. That tends to be a pretty common trend. Being the kind of person that other people want to be around because you feel better when you're around them.
Yeah.
You know, the kind of person that lifts other people up, very complimentary towards each other. That was a big thing. The really great couples are very intentional with how they spend their time together.
What do you mean?
So great. One of my favorite stories is Josh and Jenny Solar. They live in Kansas City, and they were on a road trip with their family and driving down the freeway, and Josh pulls the car over to the side of the road and tells Jenny to get out of the car. And she's like, I'm not getting out of the car.
Yeah, wait a minute.
And he's like, no, you need to get out of the car. And she's like, I'm not getting out of the car. It's raining cats and dogs outside. And he's like, get out of the car. I want to make out in the rain with you. And I'm like, oh my gosh, how many husbands just drive or even complain about the rain?
Sure.
But then there's this one guy who decides he wants to make a romantic memory with his wife. You know, and stories like that popped up over and over and over again. Couples who would only argue when they were dancing in the kitchen together, or couples who had the tradition every night of like giving each other a foot rub or telling each other the top three things that they loved about the other person that day. At the end of the day, couples that decided that they didn't want the intimacy to die in their relationship, so they made a commitment to make out for 10 seconds or longer every single day at least.
Yeah.
Once. Yeah. But like these moments that they intentionally created, they're like, we want to have a relationship like this, so we're going to do this. Like we don't want to be ugly fighters, so we're going to fight naked.
Right.
There's a couple who whenever they had heated agreements, they just go up to the room and they take off their clothes, and it would resolve itself real quick.
It seems like it would be like you would almost have this idea that you would be forcing it by doing something like that, by being so intentional about the affection or the timing for the other person. But I think that it very much is what you say it is, the commitment to, hey,
yeah,
we want to have a good relationship, so we're intentionally making these choices to do
so,
these things.
So much of romance, 21st century romantic relationships are a skill. It's a practice.
Yeah.
It's something like you're absolutely right. It does sometimes feel a little bit forced, but it has to be a choice that you make time and time and time and time again until it becomes a habit.
Right.
And a lot of people are very reactive in their relationships, I found. The relationships that really struggle are the relationships where that intentionality is completely absent. Hmm. That commitment to saying, hey, what we're doing isn't working, so let's do something different. Instead, they just say, well, what we're doing isn't working, but
I'm not going to do something.
They don't
else.
Even have the conversation. It just is like, well, we're just going to keep going forward until either something breaks or something miraculously changes.
Yeah.
And the thing is that most people haven't been taught the skills of how to have a great relationship. And it's really unfortunate, I think. And that's kind of what I'm on a mission to do now is
so in each of these episodes, and forgive me, and people can find them where?
LoveYouMentory.com. They're on iTunes. And
how many are there?
We're approaching 100 right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is it a standard length where people, it's like an hour, you can check in for episode this. And
most
it's
episodes are between 45 minutes and an hour. There's a few that are a little bit longer and a few that are a little bit shorter.
Okay. But
generally speaking, 45 minutes to an hour.
So when you say you went to like the parade and talked to people, so will you just combine a bunch of different discussions?
Yeah. Those, I had two episodes at the parade, and those were really unique, and I just wanted to, I wanted to get over a fear I had of approaching strangers, and that's why I did that. But most episodes, it's like a stranger invites me into their living room, and I set up a microphone, and we just go, all right, let's hear your story. And
okay, I'm in your living room.
Yeah. Hi. It's weird, though. Except because I'll walk into a stranger's living room and have that conversation, and then when I leave, I feel like sometimes I know more about them as a couple than even some of their closest friends.
Yeah.
So you walk in strangers and you leave like sending Christmas cards to each other and exchanging information. And when can you come to my baby's blessing? Yeah. And
I'm hoping to get married one day. So I'm going to take your address right now. I'm going to send you an invitation.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
I think it's a fascinating thing. Do you find things to be terribly different generationally?
No, not really.
Things are pretty consistent as far as what...
Yeah, I mean, there's... How people meet is very different.
Yeah, well, certainly. Kids today, it's internet or app or...
But largely speaking, kind people who know how to talk to each other and are willing to custom design their own relationship and work at it and work at the skills are, regardless of the generation, have great relationships.
So you set out to start doing this because you felt like you were flawed in some way.
Yes.
So how are you flawed?
I think it boils down to the fact that I didn't have the skills. I didn't.
Were you unkind, or what specifically? Oh, yeah. As you kind of came through it,
I was very unkind. But I was unkind I was unkind in the way that most Mormon guys are unkind, meaning that I was a nice guy.
Okay. And I think, what do you mean?
Nice guys are the biggest a-holes, because nice guys will do anything to save their nice guy reputation.
Okay.
Like, nice guys want to preserve that nice guy identity, and so they will lie and manipulate people to preserve their own self-image.
Huh.
I think it's really, really common, because people get really attached to that image. And
oh, like, he's that guy. He's
identity.
That type of guy. He's
the golden boy, you know, like mm-hmm. we talked about at the beginning. I couldn't have flaws. I couldn't have imperfections. And so, like, if I was dating a girl and she was doing something that drove me nuts, or something happened that wasn't kosher with me or wasn't in alignment with that image, I'd break up and I'd make up some excuse like, oh, I just don't feel like this is the right thing. And, you know, the spirit told me, whatever. Yeah. I'd make up any excuse.
Did you do the spirit told me, really?
I probably have. I'll own it, man.
That's
stupid.
The worst one.
It is the worst.
That's the worst one for two reasons. One, because I feel like it's kind of lying about God things, and it's like, nah. And then the second thing is you can't combat the spirit thing.
No, but anybody who says that is full of crap.
Yeah.
It's a line people use to avoid telling the truth.
Right.
And so I noticed that was coming up for me. Once I started doing this and learning about, you know, what there's a difference between being a good guy and a nice guy,
mm-hmm.
and what good guys were like, and that they were honest, and that even when sometimes things would hurt, then they'd be painful, they were
right.
still honest.
Right.
That's something I still struggle with, but I'm so much more aware of now. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those skills that I'm developing, is like just being transparent and honest, and what you see is what you get. And I'm no longer this like fake version of what I think everybody else thinks I should be. So, sorry. In a very real way, I was a total jerk.
Yeah. Is there a flaw on the side of too honest? Because that's what I think.
I think there's a flaw in not being able to balance honesty with tact and kindness.
Right.
Like, if you're brutally honest and mean about your honesty, I think that can be really dangerous. But
yeah, so maybe I got some work to do.
Oh, we all do, man. It's a lot of it's about timing and tone and
and intention too. Why are you saying the thing that you're saying? Because sometimes it's just me.
You look fat in that dress.
Yeah.
I didn't even ask.
No, but you did look fat. Oh, well, you don't want me to be honest?
You need to know.
Do people ever give you a hard time? Who are you to be the one to do this?
Well, why should I take advice from a single guy?
Because you're a calm guy too. You're not
a researcher.
Yeah, you're not a psychiatrist. You're not a
storyteller.
Yeah,
and I agree. Don't take advice from me, but take it from the people who are doing it right, which is the people who I'm talking to. At first, I considered myself an anti-expert. Like, I'm the guy who goes to the experts and relays the information they have in an approachable way. And I think over time I've developed quite a repository of knowledge, and I've been able to sit down with I started out with couples, and like 2 weeks ago I got to sit down with John and Julie Gottman of the Gottman Institute.
Okay.
And they're like the world renowned relationship researchers, some of the most famous relationship researchers of all time, amazing people. And I got to spend like an hour with them in their hotel room.
Oh my gosh,
it's crazy. And you know, they're sitting down next to me telling me, oh wow, you know a lot, are you a therapist? And I'm like, oh, it's crazy to see the journey.
You're like, comm major, what's up?
Yeah, not to toot my own horn, but like it's crazy to go from the guy who's sitting on a friend's couch, you know, because they're being nice and letting me interview them as my first couple episodes,
mm-hmm.
to being this guy who now is sitting down with like
the
foremost authorities, Gary Chapman, who wrote the Five Love Languages, and Gottman's, who wrote the Seven Principles for Making Marriage Work, these New York Times bestsellers and famous researchers and thought leaders. And they're like, yeah, could we be on your podcast? And I'm like, yes.
And they're asking you. They're coming to you.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I get approached by authors and therapists now, and it's really cool. So now not only am I getting these stories, but I'm getting the actual hard data to support the stuff that we found in the stories.
Is it something you're able to do now as a job?
No. It's still
nope. Nope.
It's still a hobby, but I'd love to work towards that and make it something that brings
it. It's fun, day. Huh?
I love it, man. I just love it.
It's like this. I would love to do this.
All day. Dude, I would come hang out with you all day.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? We could do this all day. But
totally. People, pay us money so we can do this.
All day. Is anyone paying us money yet? Nobody?
No.
No one? Well, we'll get there.
What if we pay each other money?
Yeah.
I'll pay
Dude,
you
I'll totally
$5.
Pay you.
You pay me $5.
Done.
Rich. And then if we just build downlines and get a couple of our friends to pay us $5.
And if we can figure out something that can heal people as part of it, that
there
$5 could heal people. Yeah.
I heard.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Discovered in the jungles of Honduras.
So what do you do for a job?
I own a business. It's a subscription box business called Unbox Life.
I don't know what that is.
So every month we curate some sort of activity, and we send a date in a box to couples once a month via mail.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So board games, crafts, activities, all sorts of cool stuff.
That's really cool.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
And it's called Unboxed Love?
Unboxed Love, yeah.
People can find it online at...
Unboxedlove.com, UNBOXLOVE.
So every month it's just like what's March?
We've done, one of my favorites was a chocolate making class.
Okay.
So we sent all the raw ingredients to make your own chocolate in like this mold. And then you could not mold the spores, but mold like a silicone mold to.
Yeah.
And that was awesome. We've done like a words of love themed date where we sent them like a mailbox and some stationery and sidewalk chalk and a bananagrams, a word game. And they decorated the mailbox together and used it as a love note delivery system in their house.
That's cool.
That was fun. So a lot
where do you
cool
get an idea like that?
Games. I don't know, man.
You just came up with it?
It just comes to me in my brain area.
A lot of people, obviously if that's your job, then a lot of people got to be buying into it.
We're doing all right. Not as great as I mean, you always can do better.
Sure.
But we're doing well.
That's great.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Here's the thing that I think about now as you've talked about your great girlfriend at the beginning of this. I would think it would be a little bit intimidating for her. Would she agree with that?
I think initially she was really intimidated, and now I think she just thinks she's lucky. And I think I'm lucky also.
Yeah.
Just to be clear.
And no doubt, just by looking at you, you're dating way up if you're dating anyone.
It's true. It's so true.
Right?
Yeah.
It's the same thing here. I look in the mirror and go, jeez, okay.
Yeah. I'm just lucky that she threw me a bone.
Yeah. Here, come here. You can. But it would be terribly intimidating, I think. And then especially where you're like, you have all these expectations too, because as much as you want to downplay or not have that image of it, that does play a part of who you are.
Yeah. The expectation that I have. So the really interesting thing, Richie, is that these stories of these amazing couples have also shown to me the reality that there's no such thing as a perfect relationship. Mm-hmm. And every couple that I've interviewed has been through tragedy, trauma, difficulties, fights, near divorces, losses of children, bankruptcy, you know, terminal illnesses. I interviewed one guy who his wife had a brain tumor removed and it happened successfully. Everything went great. And then a week later, he started to realize that his wife was different. And they, during the process of removing the tumor, something altered her brain chemistry and she was a different person.
Oh my gosh.
And so for like the last 30 years, he's been married to this woman that is different from the same body, but different personality than the woman he married. And he just stayed with her. And like people go through crazy stuff that's unexpected. And I'm totally aware, and that's part of my expectations, is that there's going to be crap. We're going to fight. We're going to argue. Things are going to go wrong. We're going to have obstacles and challenges, and things are going to happen unexpectedly. And we're not going to handle everything perfectly. And like I said at the beginning, I'm a student. Like, I am not perfect at this stuff. I know a lot of the theory, but I am the first to admit that I haven't had a lot of practice. Hmm. And so once she got that I'm like in this with her, and more than anything, I do have an aspiration and expectation of where I'd like to be one day. I know I'm not there now. Right. And I just want somebody who's willing to step in and play the game with me.
Sure.
You know, and the fact
that she's
willing to show up and be like, yeah, let's do this. And I love this vision you have. And here's what I want to bring to the table. And I'm like, great, let's do it. Like, that's the biggest thing for me is the thing that I've been looking for the most is somebody who's just ready to show up with me and be like, let's do this. You know, there's a difference between playing, basketball with the kids in the neighborhood that when they things don't go their way, they take their ball and go home. Mm-hmm. And playing with somebody who wants to be like in the NBA and they know that you have to practice as a team even if you hate each other sometimes.
Right.
And if you walk away from each other, like you're not a team anymore and you can't get to the finals. So I just am thrilled to have somebody that's not going to take their ball and go home anymore and somebody who's like, all right, let's do this. I'm in it to win it. Like, let's be NBA Finals champs, MVP all the way.
So if she's on board with that, how do you know when it's time to ask her to marry you?
It's a great question. That's something I've been thinking a lot about.
Yeah. I wish people could see you. We'll see. It's like,
It's
because there's not a magic. I mean, I know when I asked my wife to marry me that, like it wasn't like a, all right, it's 11 months and 3 days. And that's when the spirit said at 11 months and 3 days, it's the time you do it. But
yeah, I'm a firm believer that the spirit doesn't necessarily dictate that stuff.
It's just
like, you know, you make a choice and if it's the wrong choice, you'll probably get the heads up. I've had that happen before.
Yeah.
And if it's a good choice or even a mediocre choice, it's not going to have a detrimental effect. You just go for it. Make your own decisions.
Right.
So
it was interesting for me because I was super panicked before I got married. That you know, my thought, the thing that made it so that I was even able to do it is I was like, hey, you know what? If I do this and it doesn't work out, then I don't have to do this anymore.
Yeah.
And really, because it was so daunting for me to be like one person the rest of my life and into eternity, and I don't know if I'm ready for this, and how do I know if this is the right person or anything like that? And then it was just like, you know what? If you did it wrong, don't be married anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like if there's something, and you know, to kind of bring it back into what you're saying, if it's more than just like disagreements, if there's just something that is not working. You can't get it to work. It won't work its way out. One person isn't being a part of it or whatever.
Yeah.
And it just has to be done. It can be done and you can go on.
I think what you bring up a great point. One thing I've noticed a lot in dating culture right now and just relationship culture is there's a high aversion to risk and rejection.
Right.
And you look at apps like Tinder, and Tinder is great because it minimizes the amount of rejection you have to go through to find somebody that you could that will say yes to a date.
Yeah.
And possibly a relationship. But when you look at, if we want to make this religious, if you look at scripture or even just in everyday life, the people who are excellent always are willing to take rejection head on and push through it so they can experience the miracle.
Yeah.
So we could use scriptural examples. You look at Noah and Moses or Nephi, you know, these guys, God told them to do something and they go out and they do it and then they get rejected. And it's like, what the heck, God? You told me to go do this thing. And
hey, God, was that a joke? What are we doing here?
Yeah. But then they go back and they go again and they go again and they go again. And then finally something awesome happens and the miracle happens. And the miracle's on the other side of rejection and the other side of risk. And if you look in like normal life, you know, you look at people, the presidential campaign is a great example. Like a lot of these guys entered the campaign and somebody's going to win. And if they hadn't faced rejection head on, then they would never experience that success. And same thing happens in business. And the same thing applies in relationships. And I think a lot of people avoid taking that risk of getting married or being accountable for the fact that they might be scared.
Mm-hmm.
And they never get to experience the miracle that is true love because they never take the risk like you took. So
yeah. Let's take a break and come back in the third block. I want to know what's maybe next for you or what other things you're going to explore into. And we'll remind people about where they can get the unboxed and the unboxed love and get more information about you and what you got going on. We'll take a break for a second, be right back in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Hi, this is Dan, the Laptop Man from PC Laptops in Salt Lake City. Many of our customers are computer experts with decades of experience that are so smart they know how to build their own computers with their own bare hands. Yet they buy their computers from PC Laptops because of one thing: the PC Laptops desktop lifetime parts and labor warranty. If a video card blows up, normally you'd have to mail it to Chumbawamba for weeks to get service. Imagine having your computer down for weeks. Experts buy from PC Laptops because time is money. And if you have a part fail on your PC Laptops desktop, we will replace it forever for free. Get a brand new PC Laptops desktop for just $7.99 with a lifetime warranty at any PC Laptops locations. While supplies last, $7.99, you can't beat that deal. Please visit us at any one of our locations right now. Call us at 1-877-596-SAVE or check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com. Desktop computers with a lifetime warranty for just $7.99. $9.99.
Time for the third block of the Cultural Hall. Sitting down with, I almost did it again, Nate Bagley. I almost said Pat Bagley. Not at all the same person or even related. Talking about Lovumentary. And tell people again where they can find the unboxlove.com.
Yeah, unboxlove.
How much does that cost?
So $30 a month. $39 bucks a month.
That's pretty cool.
Including shipping. Yeah.
So comes... Does it come? It's, do a lot of people do that for gifts? Like, hey, sweetheart, we're going to do this. Here's your Christmas gift or anniversary gift.
Yeah, a lot of people do it as gifts. A lot of people do it for, like, newlyweds.
Okay.
And then a lot of people, especially our what seems to be our sweet spot, is people who have young kids and can't afford to get a babysitter every month. Oh. So it's like put the kids to bed, and then you have 2 hours that you didn't have to plan of like cool activities and conversation.
That's great.
Yeah.
And it's unboxlove.com.
Correct.
And then lovumentary.com for all the love stuff we've been talking about. You can subscribe to it on iTunes.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so what's next?
As long as you're subscribing also to the Cultural Hall podcast.
Yeah, of course. Well,
but don't subscribe to the Lovumentary unless you subscribe to Cultural Hall.
Oh, no.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, people wouldn't do that.
Yeah. Gotta have your priorities straight.
Yeah, yeah. Cultural Hall shall have no other podcast before me.
Yes.
And then Lovumentary. Jeez, a little bit blasphemous, but that's fine.
It's okay.
So what's next then? What, as you do, you seem to be a person like myself too, where it's not ever that you're just fine with Unbox Love and Lovumentary. So what else have you got cooking up in that brain?
That's a great question. For business wise, I would love to eventually phase myself out of Unbox Love. I love the business itself, but I recognize that I'm not the guy to lead it to where it needs to go.
Mm-hmm.
So probably in the next year or so, I'll be stepping away as the CEO and having either somebody else come on or selling the business to somebody who can grow it to
what it
potential.
Could and should be,
and then that'll free up a lot of time and energy for me to get a lot more creative with the Lovumentary project itself. I'd love to start getting into some video, develop some courses, and like give people something a little bit more meaty that they can bite into, other than just these like stories 1 hour a week. So I would really love that. I gave a TEDx talk at TEDx Salt Lake City a couple months ago, and I just loved that. I loved getting in front of a group of people and sharing my knowledge and my passion, and it was really well received, and I would love to do more of that, a lot more speaking.
Same time, same day every week that it releases?
I try.
Yeah, right? It's hard.
I'm not super consistent, but I try and get them out around Thursday or Friday every week. So.
Any thought to going to school, back to school, and doing some sort of...
I thought about it. Here's the thing about therapy is a lot of people have told me, like, you should go be a therapist. You'd be an amazing therapist. And I don't disagree with that, but a lot of people who go to a marriage and family therapist, it's a last-ditch effort to save their relationship.
Right.
And I would much rather work in what I would call preventative care, where I'm training people before they ever even have the problems, how to avoid the problems and the pitfalls, rather than working with people who are just like, I give up, I hate my partner, and we're just done, and...
It seems to me like there should be a much greater focus, and maybe there is, and I just was blind to it when I got married, but it seems like there should be like a, hey, you're married, and here's a huge newlywed counseling workshop extravaganza.
Most Christian churches have something like that,
and
our church does not have a whole lot of that.
Like, we have the marriage prep
course, but it's not...
But it's like, if you have you and you have your
love triangle,
the love triangle. Exactly.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, but you know what? I'm mad right now. And Jesus ain't hanging out with me. I'm ticked and I can't resolve this concern.
And nobody sits down in that class and says, hey, this is how you deal with money issues. Or this is what you do when your in-laws suck.
Yeah.
Or this is like, you don't get a whole lot of the reality. And a lot, or they don't talk about sex ever in our church. And I think sex is a big
part
of marriage.
You mean, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's intimacy.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
In the bedroom.
Let's talk. You know, intimacy. Right?
So
I think that really is. Anyway, that's a whole different tangent
for
a different time.
But I think we would do really well in the church. This is one thing. If I could campaign for one thing right now, being a single adult, I would campaign to have an awesome marriage prep course and have that be on repeat in singles wards across the world.
Absolutely.
Because, like, man, like I said at the beginning, if you don't have the skills, you're not likely to succeed.
Yeah.
And too many people go into marriage blind, thinking that if they love Jesus enough, their relationship's going to work out.
Right.
And it helps. Like, it helps to be a Christ-like person. And it also helps to have the skills of how to manage conflict.
Yeah.
And how to, yeah, all this other
stuff.
How
to be able to voice a concern and not...
Yeah.
See, we just developed a thing right there.
Program.
A new church program. Done. What do we call it?
I hope they're listening, brethren.
Yeah.
They all listen to this podcast.
Yeah,
right?
Of course. Well, a few.
I believe that.
A few, because we get letters.
Do you really?
No. I mean, not that we're going to talk about here.
Right. Offline.
Yeah, offline. I'll tell you all about it. No, but there should be that much, like... That's one of the things that I think with the church. I'm not naysaying the church, but I feel like we could really benefit. You know, when they do the fifth Sunday lessons,
yeah.
And it seems like we kind of go askew of what a normal lesson would be like. Instead of faith, we're talking about, like, let's talk about retirement plans. Like, yeah. I really feel like,
or the infamous pornography.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I feel like we could just, if we could just really do practical things, mm-hmm. like, let's talk about savings, everyone. Oh, yeah. This is what this means. Or, you know, your mortgage, you could save money this way. Or your, you know, your intimate relationship, this could be this. You know what I'm saying? If we just had...
Turn on some Barry White.
Yeah.
Boom. That's like the opening hymn.
Yeah, jeez.
Let's get it on.
In the fifth Sunday.
I'm sorry, Reverend. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. But if we had that, where it could be a comfortable and educated discussion about it.
The thing is that people have a hard time talking about things that are uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get uncomfortable, they get scared and they throw a fit and then they write letters.
Right.
So.
But so necessary for people to be able to be uncomfortable in order to be a better person.
I totally agree with you 100%. I have a bishop right now who's amazing, and he gives a chastity talk every 6 months,
mm-hmm.
and he draws stick figures on the board and gets really specific and, like, uses modern terminology and says, this is okay, this is not okay. Touching here is okay, touching here is not okay.
Yeah.
If you're doing this, you need to come talk to me. If you're doing this, you need to come talk to me. And every time he does it, he gets complaints, not from the kids, but from their parents. You know, they go to the stake president and, I can't believe your bishop's talking. It's like, well, you don't, obviously you're not talking to your kids about this.
Yeah.
So I think it's really necessary. If you're going to experience growth, you have to experience discomfort, and talking about sex is uncomfortable, and talking about a lot of things is uncomfortable.
It's the worst, right? The being uncomfortable, but then, like, it's so good. I mean, going back to related to the scriptural stuff, like you were saying, you know, examples of Nephi where it's like, this really sucks.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, or even the Savior.
I gotta go back to Laban again?
Or like, even the Savior twice. Himself who was like, hey, you know what? Really would rather not.
You sure?
if there's, but, you know, did it. And then think of all that was gained, the insight that was learned, the growth that came about because of, you know, being crucified. Anyway.
It's amazing what comes on the other side of discomfort.
You know, I've been uncomfortable enough. I'm ready for uncomfort.
Yeah?
Yeah. I want to ask you the three questions that we ask everyone that steps into the cultural hall. You ready to do this?
I hope so. I'll put on my seatbelt here.
The first question is, do you have a calling? And if so, what is it?
I have a calling. I just got released as the Elders Quorum President and I'm now the Service Committee Co-Chair.
That's cool.
Because that's a thing in singles wards.
So that means you plan the service projects?
Plan service projects and try and help our ward become more service oriented.
That's great.
A big thing for me. So.
And hard.
Really hard. And my big goal right now, honestly, is to get people to change. I want people to get involved in the community.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sick of service projects like, hey, we're going to clean the church or we're going to go, you know, weed somebody's garden. And those are great things to do.
Right.
But not every time. You know, there's a lot of people in the community and other faiths, especially other churches that I'm working on teaming up with. That
cool.
To try and get a more broad experience of what it means to serve like Christ served. Get outside your comfort zone.
Yeah. Again, getting people uncomfortable. If you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make one up, what would you pick?
I just love teaching Sunday school.
Gospel doctrine?
Gospel doctrine, man, all the way.
Let me ask you this, though.
Or the ward hugger. That'd be great, too.
I'm the ward hugger. What are the four classes would be your favorite? Because I taught Old and New Testament when I was gospel doctrine
teacher. Oh, yeah. That's a good question. I don't know. New Testament? I really like the New Testament a lot.
Yeah.
I like studying the life of Christ. I feel like we get distracted sometimes and forget that this is all about him. And I really, really like studying the life and teachings of Christ.
I've always wanted to teach the church history, doctrine, and covenants part.
Oh, yeah?
Never got the chance. Got released before I got the chance. And it's like, no, come on. This is the reason why I took this calling was so I could stick around and be...
There's a long road yet for you. There'll be a day.
Yeah. Just got to be uncomfortable for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final question is, what is your favorite part of your faith?
Oh, man. My favorite part of my personal faith right now is the... I feel like over the last several years, I have gained the courage to doubt and to be okay with it.
Hmm.
I've learned, there's this amazing TED talk, and this woman talks about, it's about faith.
You're going to have to send me the link so I can put it with your episode. It'll be available at the culturalhall.com.
Yes, culturalhall.com. So basically, this woman talks about how faith and doubt are two sides of the same coin, and you can't have faith without having doubt. And if you remove the doubt from faith, what you have is certainty. And when you have people who are religious and absolutely certain that their beliefs are true, that's when you have horrible, horrible things like 9/11, the Crusades, you know, and the things that are happening in the Middle East right now and things that are even happening here in the States with people who are just really cruel to each other, and they just use Jesus, they use Christ or God to justify their mean and terrible actions. And I feel like I was raised in a culture, in a neighborhood, in a ward where certainty was the norm. You stand up every week and say, I know. And I am proud to say I don't know. And I don't have a problem saying that anymore. I don't have a problem saying, you know, I may never know. I may never know in this life whether God exists or not, or whether Jesus suffered for my sins or not, or whether Joseph Smith is really a prophet, or whether the Book of Mormon is really quote unquote true.
Mm-hmm.
But I really believe it.
Yeah.
And I am happy. That's one thing that I love about my faith right now is that there's room for me to just be a believer and that my faith is enough.
Hmm.
So
I love it.
Yeah.
Make sure you get that to me so people can check that out.
I will.
And then finally, we like to end every episode like this. So if you have one that you'd like to join in on, make sure you do it. We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body.
It did me the good I needed.
Yeah. Yay. Perfect. And that if you weren't able to listen this week, that you'll be able to listen next week. And that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat, it's sure to be neat. On the back row, we really gotta go on the Culture Hall show.